Hi, this is Meredith Irvine, editor of compensationstandards.com. Welcome to today's episode of the Pay and Broxy podcast. Today, my guest is Sherry Adler. Sherry is a partner in Troutman Pepper's Philadelphia office, and Sherry recently co-authored a memo on equity award delegations following the recent DGCL amendments. So we'll be discussing that topic today. Sherry, thanks so much for being here. Before we kick off, can you share a little bit about your background and practice with our listeners?
Sure. Thank you so much, Meredith. I'm delighted to be here and really looking forward to our conversation today. I'm an employee benefits and executive compensation partner at Troutman Pepper. I began my career at Cleary Gottlieb and lateral to Pepper Hamilton, now Troutman Pepper, back in 2017. My practice focuses on public company executive compensation, and I advise on all types of equity and cash-based compensation arrangements and corresponding SEC disclosures. In addition, I provide employee benefit support on M&A and other corporate transactions. For the purposes of this podcast, I also wanted to give a shout out to my firm's corporate team based in Wilmington, Delaware, who I collaborate closely with on Delaware-specific issues, including the topic of our podcast today.
Perfect. So, of course, we all know that Delaware law allows the board to delegate authority to make equity awards. But previously, different DGCL sections and requirements applied depending on, the type of award being granted. Before we actually jump into the recent amendments and, how they sought to address that, can you give us some background on that and how these requirements previously differed?
Absolutely. So prior to the 2022 amendments, Section 152 of the DGCL provided the board with broad discretion to delegate authority to anyone, any person or body, to grant restricted stock awards and to set the terms and conditions of those awards, such as vesting terms. On the other hand, Section 157C of the DGCL, which governs options and rights, such as restricted stock units or RSUs, required that the delegate be an officer of the company. In addition, the officer was only authorized to designate the people receiving the grants and the number of options or RSUs that they'd receive. So the officer could not determine the other terms and conditions of the grant, such as vesting conditions. It all had to be set forth by the board or the comp committee in advance in the authorizing resolutions. Let's take an example. Let's say authorizing resolutions gave the delegate the ability to grant RSUs with a 3-year vesting schedule because that was the company's normal practice. Now, fast forward 1 year, and the company is on a fast track negotiating a new hire package. The candidate is not an executive officer, the grant amount is small, and the company wants to offer the candidate a 2-year vesting schedule instead of 3-year. The delegate did not have the authority under the old DGCL provisions to make a grant with a 2-year vesting schedule, despite the fact that it wasn't an executive officer grant and the grant amount was small. The comp committee still had to approve that grant. So the old regime really tied the hands of delegates in this regard.
It's also a potential football area for folks who didn't understand this, right? This narrow ability to delegate.
Absolutely.
So can you describe how exactly really the 2022 amendments to the DGCL tried to tackle this issue?
Sure. Under the 2022 amendments, the flexibility that companies historically enjoyed when it came to structuring delegations for restricted stock was extended to delegations for granting options and rights too. So there was no longer this misalignment between different types of equity awards. So first, the statute no longer required that delegates for the grant of options or rights be officers of the company. So now the company could select anyone to serve as the delegate for any type of equity award. And to be sure, many companies are still going to use officers as their delegate, right? Their CEO or perhaps another high-ranking officer. But there are companies, such as big public companies, who might find it easier to delegate authority to a human resources manager or a total rewards professional who's not necessarily an officer to manage these equity grants. So that was a welcome change. And secondly, the statute no longer restricted delegates from determining the terms and conditions of options and RSU grants. So now the delegate could determine the vesting terms and all the other relevant terms and conditions of any type of equity award.
And of course, these amendments were very well received. I think everyone appreciated this change. But early on, a lot of practitioners identified, some ambiguities there and some interpretive questions. Can you walk through those and then also how the 2023 amendments tackled those issues?
Sure. So the 2022 amendments provided that in order for the board or the compensation committee to set up an equity award delegation, for options or RSUs, there had to be a couple of things that were set forth in the authorizing resolution. So first of all, the resolution had to fix a maximum number of options or rights that could be granted by the delegate. And second, a maximum number of shares issuable pursuant to the awards. So the second piece, a maximum number of shares issuable pursuant to the delegation, is clear, right? That's just a cap or a share pool. But the additional requirement to fix a maximum number of options or rights left a lot of us scratching our heads. What did the additional cap mean? Did it mean that if the board authorized 100 shares for grants made by the delegate, it also had to set a limit like, but only 50 option grants and only 50 RSU grants? Or did it mean that an additional limit was needed on the number of grants that could be papered? For example, we can only grant 10 option grants total with a total share limit of 106 shares, right? So only 10 grants, use up your 100 shares in those 10 grants. Thankfully, the legislature cleared up that confusion by eliminating this additional requirement in 2023. So now it's sufficient to simply state in the authorizing resolutions the maximum number of shares that the delegate can grant pursuant to the various authorized award types. So that was a very helpful change. Second, under the 2022 amendments, the authorizing resolutions had to fix a time period during which the awards could be granted and during which the shares underlying the awards could be issued. In 2023, the legislature added clarifying language to make it clear that these could be two separate periods. To be honest, that's really how we understood it in the first place, but clarity is always welcome here. On this one, the first part of the requirement is clear, right? The board just needs to set an expiration date for the delegation, after which the delegate can no longer make awards. So the delegate can make awards until the end of 2025, and after that, it expires. But the second part of the requirement mandates that the resolution state the time period during which shares underlying the awards granted by the delegate may be issued. So let's think about this in terms of a few different types of grants. For an option, this is likely to be pretty straightforward because an equity plan in a public company oftentimes provides that the maximum term for an option is 10 years. So meaning the grantee has only 10 years to exercise the option after the grant date. Once the option is exercised, the shares will need to be promptly delivered thereafter. So we have a really clear idea on how long that grant's going to remain outstanding and when the shares are going to be delivered in respect of that grant, a maximum time limit. But take an RSU, we think this can be a bit harder. And in our view, there are still some unanswered questions even after the 2023 amendments. So let's say you have an RSU, which is typically delivered after vesting promptly, you know, it's a short-term deferral. It's delivered over a four-year period. Okay, simple enough. But the company also has an RSU deferral plan. And so the individual can elect to participate in that plan, in which case the shares may not be issued for many years, maybe even until retirement, separation from service. So here, how do you pin down a time period for the purpose of the resolutions? One approach is to state that the shares underlying the RSUs must be delivered within 5 years of grant or such later time as permitted under the ABC Company RSU deferral plan. Assuming that deferral plan is in effect at the time of the authorizing resolutions, and there's a maximum duration for deferrals hardwired in, we believe that this should be permissible because any provision in the authorizing resolutions can be made dependent on facts ascertainable outside of the resolution. So having the deferral plan and having the maximum deferral period hardwired in would just be a fact ascertainable outside of the resolution. But if the deferral plan was not yet in effect at the time of the authorizing resolution, or it didn't contain a maximum duration for deferrals hardwired in, this poses some unanswered questions as to what time limit for share delivery should be put into the authorizing resolutions. So this still remains one area where it would be great if we get further clarity at some point. Third, the 2022 amendments require the authorizing resolution to state the minimum amount of consideration, if any, for which options and rights may be issued, and the minimum amount of consideration for the shares issuable pursuant to the awards. So breaking that down as well, in terms of the minimum consideration for which options and rights may be granted or issued, it's atypical, as our listeners know, for grantees to pay any consideration at the time of a grant of an option or RSU. And the 2022 amendments, in fact, accounted for this, since they stated that minimum consideration must be stated, if any. So in other words, the board could provide in the authorizing resolution that the grants could be awarded for no consideration. Now, what about setting the minimum consideration for the issuance of the shares underlying the awards? So here, note that the statute doesn't say if any. And consistent with Delaware law, some consideration is needed for the issuance of the underlying shares. As a general rule under Delaware law, consideration must generally be no less than par value for new shares, which could be as little as fractions of a penny. And as to Treasury shares being reissued, the 2023 amendments clarify that the consideration could be even less. So we're not talking about a lot of consideration, but still there is a consideration requirement. So let's look at the different award types again. For an option, generally a public company equity plan is going to require the exercise price to be at least equal to fair market value, right, for 409A and other reasons. So this is straightforward, and it means that the grantee should generally always be paying consideration for the shares that is at least equal to par value. That should be an easy one to set out in the authorizing resolution. But now again, what about an RSU or even a restricted stock award for that matter? Recipients of these types of compensatory grants often don't pay any consideration for the issuance of those underlying shares. So the answer here is that under Delaware law, consideration does not necessarily need to be paid in money. It can be rendered in bona fide services as well. The 2023 amendments actually changed the language in the statute from minimum amount of consideration to minimum consideration. The elimination of amount seems to support the fact that consideration need not be paid in money, in cash. In our view, the consideration point is likely to be uncontroversial, because the authorizing resolution can simply state that past or future services to the company may constitute minimum consideration for the issuance of restricted stock or shares underlying RSUs. And in all foreseeable circumstances, this will be equal to at least par value. So really the consideration point, I think, is more academic than posing any sort of practical barrier.
Perfect. Thank you so much for that explanation. And your memo goes into some really great practical pointers and do's and don'ts for equity award delegations. Can you walk us through those as well?
Sure. So as to the don'ts, the statute makes it clear that delegates can't grant awards themselves. We broaden that too to restrict grants to their family members. Also, given compensation committee charter requirements and the importance of having Section 16 executive officer grants approved by a board or independent committee of the board to qualify for exemptions from the short swing profit rules, the delegate shouldn't make grants to executive officers. And again, we'd advise extending that to family members as well. In terms of the dues, so you want to make sure the company's governing documents, their compensation committee charter, equity incentive plan, et cetera, allow for a delegation as a first matter. Then you want to think about, would the delegate be indemnified for actions taken within the scope of the delegation under the company's bylaws? Is it an officer and so it's already covered? Or is additional approval required to ensure that there's indemnification there? You know, one of the main points here is just process. Process, process, process. The delegate should have a good process and written records for documenting grants. Who is it that's making sure that the grants comply with the plan terms? If the plan has minimum vesting provisions, for example, who's tracking that? Should internal legal and stock administration be involved in the grant process as a control measure? Part of process is also timing. If the company has an equity award policy or guidelines, what does it say about when grants may be made? And with the addition of item 402X to the rules for 2025 proxies, there will be a greater focus around grant timing in relation to the disclosure of material non-public information. The last thing you want is a claim that options are being backdated or granted in the money because there's no written contemporaneous approval of an option grant on the grant date. So again, written contemporaneous approval, process, good documentation when the grant is being made. And then just in thinking of tracking the grant along its life, there should be a good process for reporting out on grant activity to the board or to the comm committee. There should be a process for tracking the shares that were utilized for the delegation to ensure that more shares are not granted than should be and that were authorized. There should be a process to make sure that No grants are made after the delegation expires. So just the simple basics, corporate governance, but this is an additional layer. It's not just tracking the compensation committee equity activity anymore. It's also tracking the delegates' activities. We should make sure that internally at a company, all of this is being tracked and contemporaneous records are being kept.
Absolutely. Very important process. So you walked through all the requirements with respect to a delegation to an officer or a non-officer employee of the company, but you also described the alternative of delegating to a one-member board committee. Can you walk us through that option?
Yeah. So let's say you have a CEO who's also a director on your board. So in that case, your board can go ahead and create a committee of the board. Let's just call it the Equity Award Committee. And it would consist of the CEO director. It's another way to essentially get to the same place. The CEO would be the delegate with the authority to grant awards to non-executive officers. And the benefit here is that all these DGCL rules that we've been describing above don't apply here, because the board is simply delegating its authority to make grants under the equity plan to a committee of the board. In the same way that when it does so to the compensation committee, for example, when it does so to another committee, an equity award committee, it's not constrained by sections 152 or 157. These delegations still have many similar features as 152 and 157. You still want to set parameters for the delegation, but you don't need to worry about some of the items and some of the idiosyncratic requirements that we talked about earlier. So for example, you don't need an expiration date for this kind of delegation that's just a committee. You don't need an expiration date for when the shares can be issued pursuant to awards, that quirky issue we talked about with RSUs and deferral plans. You don't need to set the minimum consideration. The equity award committee, i.e. the CEO usually, can just do that themselves. Another plus is the board can provide the Equity Award Committee with the ability to accelerate vesting or otherwise amend grants to non-officers. And it's unclear if we can do this under a 152 or 157 delegation. While we think the delegate should be able to modify awards that he or she granted under DGCL 152 or 157, the thinking being, if the delegate could set up all the terms of the award in the first place, why can't he or she change them? There's no clear guidance on this. And as we know, this can be very helpful if there is a separation, for example, happening and there's the ability to accelerate vesting and a member of management can do this as opposed to taking it back to the comp committee. That can be very, very important to a company to have that flexibility. So that's another reason why companies may opt to do it through the Equity Award Committee, where it's clear that that ability to accelerate can be one of the terms and one of the authorities and responsibilities of this Equity Award Committee. So in this type of structure, typically you'd have the comp committee who acts as the plan administrator, and then concurrently you'd have an Equity Award Committee who has limited non-exclusive authority to grant equity to non-officers, right? The comp committee still remains its authority as well, but there's this additional committee that has authority too. You want to do a few things before you go ahead and set this up. You want to make sure the bylaws allow for a committee of one. You might need to have two directors for a company on the committee under the bylaws. Also, another important distinction is even though a DGCL 152 or 157 delegation can be set up by either the board or the comp committee, if the comp committee is the plan administrator, the committee of one actually needs to be established by the full board. And the reason for that is the comp committee would only be able to establish a subcommittee comprised of one or more of its members. And for independence reasons, you're never going to have the right person, the CEO or another member of management, sitting on the comp committee, right? So essentially the board is setting up brother sister committees. There's the comp committee and then next to it is the equity award committee. Practically speaking, we often do it as follows. We'll have the board set up the equity award committee under authorizing resolutions, and we'll have the board approve a short charter laying out the members, the authority, and the responsibilities. But we'll often also give the comp committee certain authorities over the equity award committee once the board sets it up. So for example, the charter might say that it's the comp committee that can add to or modify the number of shares available for issuance by the equity award committee so that the comp committee can change the budget or the share pool as time goes on and it doesn't always have to go back up to the full board. It might also say that the equity award committee has to report out once or twice a year on its activity to the comp committee. Again, just to make sure that the plan administrator is really tracking and keeping on top of all the grant activity, whether it's made by the comp committee itself or by this brother sister equity award committee. We do see this method being used quite often by companies whose desired delegate sits on the board anyway, because it's just a simpler way to put into place the delegation.
Perfect. What excellent practical suggestions for everyone. I really want to urge our listeners to read the entire Troutman Pepper memo. And I'd recommend that you even keep it near and use it for reference when you go to prepare future delegation resolutions. You can find it on compensationstandards.com under our stock options practice area. And you can also get it on the Troutman Pepper website. Thank you all for listening. And thanks again, Sherry, for joining me today.
It was truly a pleasure to be here. Thanks so much. And thank you to all our listeners.